versus Walker.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Kelly Burdett, and I represent Mr. Jason Lee in a matter that arose out of a bike truck collision that occurred in West Seattle, Washington.
I'll save some time for rebuttal.
Oh, excuse me. Yes. How about 3 minutes? Thank you, Your Honor. Sure. Essentially, the bottom line of why we are here today is we believe that the court erred in not instructing the jury in two very important jury instructions, which may have provided a different outcome for my client.
Do you concede that the instructions that the court gave were sufficient?
I do not. We did not. No. I mean, we did not object to the set that was given to the jury. We only have the two that we have issue with.
Well, let me be more specific.
Sure.
The court gave some negligence instructions. Do you object to the giving of those instructions as being insufficient?
No, Your Honor.
So you're talking about the court's decision to decline to give your proposed instructions?
Correct.
Thank you.
And those two instructions are Washington Pattern Interrogatory 60.01, which directs the jury to RCW 4661140, stating that whenever any roadway has been divided into two or more clearly marked lanes of traffic, a vehicle shall be driven as nearly as practicable entirely within a single lane and shall not be moved from such lane until the driver has first ascertained that that movement can be made with safety. The facts in this case are my client, who was riding in a clearly marked bike lane, headed north. The truck, the defendant, was driving his truck ahead of my client in a lane. And it's our theory of the case that the driver of the truck cut across the clearly marked bike lane, which caused my client to collide into the rear panel of this truck, which was also towing a trailer.
So he failed to see what was there to be seen.
That's our argument, yes, Your Honor.
And wasn't the jury instructed on that point?
Yes, they were instructed on that point. What they weren't instructed on was that our client was the favored driver. And that's the second jury instruction that we have issue with, that wasn't presented. And essentially, the Sanchez instruction states that it is the disfavored driver's primary duty to prevent a collision. And clearly, in the record, it shows that Mr. Lee, my client who was riding on his bike, had the right-of-way. And so we took exception to the fact that we weren't given either one of these two instructions.
Don't most of those cases, O. Sanchez and his progeny, deal with favored drivers in an intersection where they're either approaching each other or right angled to each other?
They do, and I think that's an interesting point, but they all are different fact scenarios. So I believe, and I think it somewhat comes out in the cases that, and I think I believe actually in Sanchez, Sanchez says, we said in that case, referring to Poston, that all rights of a way are relative and the duty to avoid an accident at intersection rests upon both drivers and the primary duty to avoid a collision is that of the disfavored driver. Well, this collision occurred at an intersection. The driver of the truck was making a right-hand turn, crossed over the bike lane. He was at an intersection at a red light, so he was making a right-hand turn, didn't yield into the bike lane, and my client, who had the green light, just like a car would in a marked lane, didn't have time to stop and collided. So, yes, I do agree with you that the factual pattern isn't the same in Poston, Grobe, and Sanchez, but they're all referring about intersections and favored drivers.
Is the key to this, and from your point of view, then, that this accident occurred at an intersection?
Yes. So the light was green. The truck trailer started to go like this. It was a narrow road, Frontenac Street.
Let's say the truck driver had pulled over to park in mid-block. and the collision occurred. Would your client still be in considered a favored driver under your interpretation?
Under my interpretation, yes, because he had to cross over into a lane to do so.
So it's not the intersection that's key in your argument. It's the fact that he was in a lane and the truck driver was in another lane, and he didn't look before he.
That was our main theory, correct?
Okay.
And the collision just happened to occur at a bike lane point where there was an intersection where he was turning up Frontenac Street. So, we are here to discuss these two jury's instructions is that we feel under the standard of review that our client wasn't provided the reasonable ability to argue his case.
What is the standard of review in a court's decision to decline to give instructions?
Under Alfredson, is my understanding that the jury instructions are reviewed for de novo, for error, and the court looks to three elements, whether or not.
So you're saying it's a de novo review?
I am saying it's a de novo. And the number one prong, I feel, was not satisfied for our client in that he wasn't able to argue his case under these two jury instructions. Clearly, the instructions that were given didn't mislead anybody or didn't misstate any facts or applicable law. But our main contention is that Mr. Lee wasn't properly able to argue the fact that he was a favored driver, he had the right-of-way, and that the driver, Mr. Walker, failed to, he had the primary duty to avoid the collision, and he failed to do so. And then, of course, the other part of the favored driver instruction is that the favored driver, once they see that a disfavored driver is going to turn or whatnot, has a reasonable reaction time to try to avoid the collision, which in this case, my client did not and suffered personal injuries. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Rod Umberger on behalf of the respondents, Josiah Walker and Infrasource Services. I'll be brief. First of all, this court's review is one of for abuse of discretion. The issues raised are the failure to give two specific instructions, and I think the law in this state is pretty clear that it's an abuse of discretion standard that will be applied here, not de novo. Even if the court applied that, though, any error here was not prejudicial because proper instructions were given on the issue of negligence. And what the appellant wants to have argued here are two instructions that amount to nothing more than augmenting instructions. Instruction number 12 actually covered the very issues that either WPI 60.
I think what appellant wanted to argue is that the bike rider was the favored driver in this position, and she wasn't able to argue that. And the reason she thinks that he was in the favored position is because he was in his lane, and he had a right to expect that the truck driver wouldn't come over into his lane without at least looking and determining it was safe for him to do so.
I understand. And the reason the trial judge, I believe, correctly refused to give that instruction was because under the facts of this case, unlike those in the three cases, Sanchez, Poston, and Graub, it was not clear who was the favored or disfavored driver. The facts of this case were that the bike was likely following the truck, this bike lane, in the regular lane of traffic. As a following driver, you would be a disfavored vehicle under that scenario. This bike lane only opened up shortly before the intersection where the driver was turning. So the jury, from these facts, could assume, as we argued, that the cyclist was actually following the truck and then swerved around the truck to pass at the last minute. So the question, unlike these other cases, where it's pretty clear who's favored and who's disfavored. You're at an intersection, you're coming from different directions. The law and the statute is clear. This was not one of those situations. And so we don't, the trial judge felt like, I believe, that this was not a clear situation of favored versus disfavored, and that's one of the reasons, or a good reason, why the trial judge refused to give that instruction. And again, you had instruction 12, and which permitted the appellant to argue his theory of the case. The instructions given were not misleading, and appellants conceded that. And we believe when read as a whole, those instructions properly inform the jury on the applicable law. And so by refusing to give 60.01, which, by the way, if you read the entire it simply requires a driver to stay in his lane until he can make a lane change safely. Instruction 12 clearly covers that. So by refusing to give it, and the Sanchez favored driver instruction, which again we believe was not proper, and agree with the court that that's just simply not a proper instruction. When you look at the annotated cases cited, Sanchez and the others, situations factually different from ours, and again the facts in our case did not lend to a favored, disfavored driver situation. So under those scenarios, we believe the court, and under the instructions given, the court should affirm the trial court's judgment in this case. And I would raise one other thing, and that is the exceptions taken, I don't believe, were proper under the law of the state. The exception was taken was, yes, we want these given, but it really did the appellant's counsel didn't really discuss why they should be given in this case. And I think our laws are pretty clear that if you're going to take exception to an instruction and you're going to come before this court, you better have very clear reasons stated with the trial judge to give that trial judge an opportunity to decide one way or the other. It really wasn't much of a discussion other than we want them given, and they weren't given. And that would be another basis to affirm the judgment, unless there's any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Three minutes.
Thank you. So I want to talk about something that opposing counsel brought up with regard to an augmenting instruction. I think under the case of Bowden, when the three-prong test is met under trial de novo, and there's no error, it's not an error to give augmentative or cumulative or repetitious instructions. So even if the argument is that jury instruction number 12 was in itself enough to instruct the jury, I don't think another argument would be under Bowden that it's not, even to give an additional instruction is not error. So I just wanted to make that point. I think what's interesting about this case is that we're talking about a bike lane and a car lane, and I think that is what seems to be sort of the confusion or, you know, the lack of understanding that, because, I mean, it's just the facts. If the facts were two cars, I don't think we'd be standing here, because a car would not just cross over onto another lane. I mean, it's clear that the driver had the primary duty. My bike, it's undisputed that Mr. Walker was in front of Mr. Lee. Mr. Lee was in a clearly marked bike lane. It wouldn't be any different if Mr. Lee was in his car and the truck driver pulled over. So I think that is sort of what clouds this particular case. And I do feel that Sanchez really does apply to this case.
If we assume that the standard of review on whether or not a court should give an instruction is abuse of discretion, inherent is in that is that the trial judge makes a determination about whether the facts support the giving of the instruction. And the trial court in this case apparently made that determination. So you have to show that that was an abuse of discretion under the circumstances. How do you do that?
Well, I believe that the evidence and the testimony that came out at trial was undisputed that Mr. Lee and his bike was traveling behind the car in his own lane. It was undisputed. Even Mr. Walker, the defendant, conceded to that. So the facts were there that he clearly was the favored driver and that Mr. Walker had the duty, the primary duty, to make a proper lookout and to avoid the collision, which did not occur. So I hope that answers your question. So in any event, we're here today. We believe our client has been prejudiced because we were not allowed to provide the jury with those two instructions, and we ask that the court remand for a new trial. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both.